Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
We are at night, usually here at the station, fascinated by the darker side of humanity. And we've spoken to many people in the past who kind of delve into the darker side of humanity or the part of the darker side of humanity. As a result, we often get guests who are experts in that field. And tonight, I'm delighted to be chatting to a senior lecturer in the School of Psychology at Queen's University Belfast, who currently is researching and his interests include the study of psychopathy, narcissism, sadism. And Dr. Costas Papagiorgiou is a PhD in psychology, specialising in development, neuroscience, genetics from Birkbeck, and also an MSc degree in cognitive and clinical neuroscience from Goldsmiths. Certainly a very clever man. And it makes me seem unsmart, actually, to be honest with you. Dr. Costas is giving a talk, by the way, on the 29th of January at the Well in Dublin on the psychology of psychopaths. And he joins me now for a little chat about the darker side of humanity. Dr. Costas, hi, how are you?
I'm fine, Niall. Thank you very much for the introduction and the invitation to your show.
I'm always, by the way, terrified sometimes when I'm pronouncing people's second names. And I hope I got the pronunciation of your name right, because I always feel it would be an insult not to get the pronunciation of your name
right. Don't worry about it. It's perfect.
Okay. Costas, I mean, when did you start or when did you get an interest in that kind of darker side of humanity? You know, particularly, I suppose, one that everybody would be aware of would be narcissism, because I suppose that's how you start to, you know, become that kind of selfish, greedy, horrible type of person, self-centered person. So when did you start to get that interest in that darker side of humanity?
Yeah, it was around 2015, 2016. I was finishing with my PhD at the time, and I thought I need to find the topic that I want to focus on for the rest of my career or my immediate career. And I thought I can have a contribution, I can make a contribution in this area. Simply because I started very early on to perceive these traits not as purely dark, not as purely evil, but as traits that can have adaptive and maladaptive properties depending on the context.
Mm. So, I mean, we do all have an element of narcissism within us, you know, because I suppose there's that whole every man for himself sort of cliche, or, you know, that idea that, you know, we always look after number one, self-preservation, et cetera, et cetera. So there is an element of narcissism within us all, isn't there?
Absolutely. And this is what we study. We study subclinical personality traits, meaning that we study personality traits that exist in every single person. So some people would score low, some people would score high on a particular trait. Most people would score averagely, but there is no person without narcissism or without, you know, psychopathy. Mm-hmm. It's a continuum.
I mean, when we hear words like psychopath and narcissism and sadism and all those things, the first thing that usually comes into our head is serial killers or people mm-hmm. of that ilk. Is that something that you've had to study as part of your research, I suppose, the background of people who would be evil people?
I mean, as I mentioned previously, I focus primarily on the positive aspect of these traits, narcissism in particular, and, you know, its relation to psychopathy. I do talk about, you know, this almost stereotype, this idea of thinking about dark traits in relation to antisocial behavior only. Mm-hmm. Because in reality, you know, something doesn't add up. If you think about psychopathy, for example, we are talking about a possible prevalence of 1% in the general population. This means in the UK, for example, that about 500,000 individuals would meet the diagnostic criteria for antisocial personality disorder, which we call psychopathy. And the number of inmates in the UK is close to 100,000. So clearly, at least in the UK, but in most societies, most prisoners are not psychopaths, and most psychopaths are not prisoners.
Yeah, so the rest of them are walking free. In other words, they're inner society.
It's exactly that. It's almost like an exercise for us. Like, where is a psychopath Waldo? Find the psychopath in a society. But
They're usually the CEO of a company or something like that, probably. Because you find, maybe through your research, you've probably discovered this yourself, but you find that people who are very successful in business tend to be quite, you know, some of them are psychopaths, but certainly some of them are quite narcissistic, or maybe they have to be ruthless.
Yeah, indeed. So there was this survey, the Great British Psychopath Survey, that was conducted about a decade ago, and They rank the professions that you would expect to find, you know, individuals scoring really high on psychopathy or really low on psychopathy. And they found CEOs, lawyers, media, apparently.
That's it. I'm in there.
Yeah. I mean, salespersons, surgeons, but not doctors, police officers, surprisingly for some, clergy person as well, scoring all very high on psychopathy. So clearly, there is a drive a predisposition of certain personality traits to accumulate in certain professions. I guess that's something that we need to study more and understand why.
These things, which I assume all of this starts off at a level of narcissism, is it nature or nurture? Or is it a bit of both?
So I would say it's a bit of both. As per usual, it's the interaction between genes and environment. If we talk about narcissism, for example, I mean, if you look at what happened in Western societies, at least in the past half a century, I think we have immortalized this idea of the self-made man, the self-made woman. So there is this societal pressure to be narcissistic. You go to a job for an interview, and they will ask you explicitly, why are you the best person, you know, for that job? They will ask you to imagine who else has applied, for example, convince yourself that you are the best person for it in narcissism, and then lie about it to get the job. So there is this kind of, you know, pressure to be narcissistic. And then if you are good at it, somehow you have a toxic personality, which doesn't make, you know, much
sense. So there's
sense.
A fine balance, really, isn't there, in between somewhere where you have to have a little bit of it, but not too much. I mean, we find narcissism, particularly in relationships, where you've got one person, you know, and we've all, you know all the signs of gaslighting and all that kind of stuff. You know, one person, love bombing, of course, is another thing that people talk about. And with narcissism, it's people who basically prey on other people and live off other people or prey on them. I mean, it is quite dangerous in itself. Now, I know it's not the same as being a psychopath. Maybe that's the next level. But narcissism in itself can destroy people.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's a quite common question that I receive, especially when I talk about potentially adaptive aspects of narcissism. They ask me, and rightly so, okay, it might be adaptive for the individual. Is it adaptive for the people that interact with that individual? Typically not. It's not a nice thing to be a narcissist. Interacting with narcissists is not particularly pleasant. But narcissism is not one trait. There are many different elements in narcissism. So there is vulnerable narcissism that typically predicts antisocial behavior. It predicts manipulation in close relationships, for example, as you mentioned. And then there is grandiose narcissism. And grandiose narcissism is, it's that person that would always brag about himself or herself. On a good day, you might find him even charming or funny without necessarily, you know, doing something bad to you or anyone else. Mm-hmm. So it depends really on what aspect of narcissism we are focusing on. It's not all good. It's not all bad, obviously, either.
And I suppose it's also you can confuse sometimes narcissism with somebody who's just very confident. And there's nothing wrong with having confidence in yourself, because everybody should have confidence in themselves. And you can also confuse narcissism with somebody who just might be a little bit selfish.
Yes, it's exactly that. So narcissism is something different than self-esteem. So narcissism and self-esteem do not correlate. Narcissism is something on top of self-esteem. It's having an unrealistic view about yourself. And having that unrealistic view most often would lead to problems, but sometimes in very difficult situations, what we find is that not wasting cognitive resources self-doubting might actually be beneficial. So in experiments, for example, that we did, we bring participants into the lab and we ask them to participate in a cognitive task. We assess intelligence, for example, or mathematical ability while we stress them. So we go there while they complete the test and we say to them, you're not good at it. You're not performing well. Your peers performed better. And what we found was that grandiose narcissists, they typically perform better, not because they are cleverer, but because they completely ignore our feedback. They just don't care because they have this unrealistic view that they are better than others. But, I mean, that can have, obviously, very negative consequences in
other
settings.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so what is the difference then between obviously narcissism and the more extreme form, which is, you know, being a psychopath? I mean, where do you step from one to the other? Because we know one leads to the other. So where do you step from one to the other? Or what is the difference? Obviously, being a psychopath being more dangerous, obviously. But what is the main difference?
I think that it's similar to any other difference between a trait and a disorder. A disorder is when somebody cannot really control his or her behavior. So when we talk about psychopaths, the best way to describe a psychopath is someone that knows his mind or her mind knows what to do, but he or she doesn't do it. With traits, so with narcissistic personality traits, for example, or psychopathic personality traits, people have some control over their behaviors, so they can, you know, use the traits in certain situations or leave it in others. But with a disorder, when it becomes a disorder, it's very hard to control it.
Oh, okay. And when we talk about age groups here, I mean, can you be a 9-year-old psychopath?
So in children, we don't typically talk. It's quite inaccurate scientifically to talk about psychopathy. So we talk about callous and unemotional traits. These involve a lack of empathy, remorse, guilt, shallow emotions, aggression, cruelty, seeming indifference to punishment. That is why it's so hard to deal with these children, because they don't respond to reward and they don't respond to punishment. That's the key.
Yeah.
And when they seem caring or empathetic, typically they want to manipulate you. Now, whether a child with callous and unemotional traits will develop psychopathy or not, it really depends on the environment. And what we see is that what is common among all psychopaths is early trauma. So early trauma is the hallmark of psychopathy, really.
So it is related to childhood trauma, a lot of it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. It's almost like, I mean, we're having this discussion quite often. If you find one violent psychopath that doesn't have early trauma, be that, you know, abuse or being raised, you know, away from his parents or, you know, poverty, extreme poverty and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be very surprised to see somebody.
Okay, so it's not just a correlation, there's a direct link. It's a direct link.
Oh, there is a direct link, absolutely, yes. So it's very, very common.
Yeah.
And we know this from famous psychopaths. If you look at, you know, the examples of Charles Manson, for example, you
yeah.
know, the archetype of psychopath. He wasn't given a name by his mother. He literally listed him as no name. He traded him for a beer. He was sexually abused at school, beaten by other children, staff members. His uncle made him wear a dress to school as a punishment. I mean, how is it possible not to become a psychopath, you know, after all that? How is it possible to form?
You couldn't have a normal life after that. You just couldn't.
No.
And when we talk about, you know, being a psychopath, is it men, women? Is it equal? Is it more prominent? You know, is it more prevalent in males or females? Would I be wrong there?
That's a very interesting question. So it's particularly males.
Okay.
So every time we talk about psychopathy, we talk about males, but that has some limitations. It has limitations in terms of how we assess psychopathy, for example, and it really depends on where you are assessing psychopathy. So in research that we did, we found that women can be more adaptive in that respect, in adverse socioeconomic conditions. So they become darker in terms of their personality when adversity is there. So when we did cross-cultural research in China, in Greece, and in the UK, we found that in China, that scored the lowest out of the three countries in the Human Development Index, males and females were more identical than different in the dark traits, which is very interesting, I think.
Okay, and in relation to, you know, how they kind of get their supply, because I know narcissists need a kind of narcissistic supply, you know, they obviously have to feed off other people. But can you tell us about this and how does that make them vulnerable? In other words, if they've nobody to feed off, does it make them vulnerable?
Well, if they don't get any reward, you mean, from their behavior?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, typically what we see then is that that aggression. So if they don't get what they want, it's very typical for people that suffer from narcissistic personality disorder or psychopathy to get really, really aggressive when they don't get what they want. And this is why they have developed that superficial charm. They're very good at turning that charm on and off, depending on whether they think they can get something, they can get what they want or not. And when they don't, then, you know, you can see the real face, really.
Have you ever studied, you know, famous people around the world? I suppose the likes of Steve Jobs was famously probably narcissistic. We see Donald Trump, quite a powerful man, quite a clever man, quite a smart man. But but to watch somebody, say, even in the last year, have so many things come at him, you know, from courtroom dramas and all sorts of things, but yet still to be able to brush it off and continue working, you know, 18 hours a day. Elon Musk, for example, the richest man in the world, seems to be a workaholic. I mean, what goes on in the minds of people like that? Do they have to be narcissistic in some way to be able to work like that and to be able to go through life like that?
Yeah, so, I mean, especially grandiose narcissists, what they really crave is success and status. To crave that almost, more than anything else, means that you will do, you know, anything to get it. And I think this is where often you have examples of, manipulation. You have examples of interpersonal abuse or problems in relationships, simply because, you know, if you value most of all your status, your success, you know, your reputation, other people will get hurt in the process. But indeed, there is an element of narcissism in successful people. Not necessarily. I'm not saying that, obviously, you know, all successful people are narcissistic. But, you know, narcissism can give you that drive, initially at least, to chase your dreams.
And in relation to, you also mentioned too in the script I have here, sadism. And obviously, for people who don't understand, that's obviously the desire to hurt other people. Is that quite a common trait among psychopaths, the desire to actually, you know, injure other people and hurt other people and, I don't know, kill other people, if that be the case? Is that quite a common thread or a common problem with psychopaths?
Yeah, so I think what is common with psychopaths is that they don't have emotional empathy. And they have cognitive empathy. They understand why they should feel empathy about someone else, but they just don't feel it. And when you don't feel it, it's very difficult, when you want to hurt somebody, not to hurt him. And hurting somebody for psychopaths can be some sort of a source of fun or pleasure, simply because they do crave they crave excitement. And I guess, you know, interacting with somebody in that way, for a psychopath, it can be exciting because it's not something that you do in everyday life. It's all about control as well. When you hurt somebody, it means that you have, you know, power over them. And that's something that psychopaths or pathological narcissists, they do crave as well. So this is why you see that link between psychopathy and sadism. Not necessarily, not always, but, you know, they have a predisposition.
So they're not always violent, is what you're saying?
They're not always violent, no. I mean, they have the predisposition to be violent, but then there is a predisposition to being violent if you have a very strong right arm. There are studies about that. Nobody is saying that we shouldn't train, you know, our arm. We shouldn't, you know, become healthier, more physically active, because that might lead to aggression. So psychopathy is like that, or psychopathic traits, not psychopath per se, is like that. Yes, they have a predisposition to violence, but it doesn't mean that they will exhibit violence.
Yeah, because I watched the video on Twitter there the other night of this homeless man. I did a bit of research afterwards after watching the video because it was quite disturbing. And it was a homeless man who was murdered in America. And the guy was eventually charged, because I found the story online eventually of the thing. But the CCTV was there. And this guy, just for whatever reason, picked on this homeless guy. And he punched him, kicked him. The guy was out cold, unconscious on the ground, and yet he continued to keep standing on his head, kicking him. And I'm going, I start thinking to myself, what drives somebody to do that? Not the initial attack, because the initial attack could be done by drugs or whatever, I don't know. But to be able to continue, knowing that the person is probably dead at this stage, and you're continuing to kick, to stand on their head, and all, I'm thinking, how can one human, and I know human beings, by the way, and I'm sure you've studied this too, I believe the figure is we're 9 times more likely to kill each other than any other animal in the animal kingdom, which is bizarre.
Yeah.
What drives, do they have to have a screw loose to do something like that, to be able to do something like that and not feel any remorse for it?
I mean, it's so difficult to tell. I mean, the wrong thing here would be to assume necessarily that that person, the murderer, is necessarily a psychopath because he did something like that. It's very difficult to understand the motives of such a violent crime unless you really study that particular case in depth. And you know what?
But it seems he was a complete stranger. This guy, he was a homeless guy. He was a complete stranger. This guy didn't know him at all. Now the guy got life in jail. That for doing it, but it wasn't so much the, you know, him murdering somebody that had me confused and had me thinking about it. It was the way in which he did it. There was no weapons involved, but it was just with his fists and with his feet, and to be able to continue to do that, no matter how angry I would be with somebody, I don't think I would have the ability to hurt somebody that much. You know, I haven't been in a fight since I was 13 years of age, and that was with a friend of mine in the lane at the back of the school, and it was a stupid little fight, and I lost. So I haven't been I haven't hit anybody in 13 years, or since I was 13 years of age. So I just don't have the ability to do that. So I would feel sorry for the person I'm hitting. So, but yet there are people out there, we see them, violent people all the time in society, and they hit people and they punch people, and the person is unconscious and they continue to punch them, knowing that they're probably killing them. And they can do that. And I find that so difficult to understand.
Yeah, I mean, because if you look at scans of, you know, the brains of psychopaths, for example, the part of the brain that is supposed to do something in these situations, it just doesn't do it. It just doesn't work. So they don't have the capacity for emotional empathy. They don't, you know, they understand, but they cognitively, they just don't. Feel it. So if you look at, you know, the hippocampus, amygdala, you know, they have an abnormal shape, they have an abnormal function, they do not work the way they should when we talk about extreme cases, obviously, of personality, of psychopathic, you know, personality traits, when we talk about psychopathy. So to that person there, you know, the murderer, probably there was nothing. He was just, you know, hitting the guy as if he was hitting a pillow. It wouldn't make any difference.
Okay, so he doesn't feel the empathy and doesn't understand the there's no logic involved in that. Okay, no, I understand what you're saying. And I suppose we sometimes hear things like there's a relationship between finger length, because you mentioned a few minutes ago about the right arm. Is there any little tests we can all do? Can we all look at our fingers and go, well, okay, if that finger is bigger than that finger, you're a psychopath. Is there any little tests we can do? Is there any kind of... Is there anything that you've noticed biological when it comes to, you know, people who are narcissistic or psychopathic? Or
I know the studies of the difference, the 2D to 4D digit ratio. I think this is what you're referring to. I don't think they predict reliably personality traits, psychopathic personality traits or narcissistic personality traits. I mean, in extreme cases, brain scans can show abnormalities that would indicate psychopathy. There is genetic vulnerability, so certain genetic variants, we know that they associate, they don't necessarily predict, but they associate, they predispose you to psychopathy. There's no reliable test. This is why we talk about suspected, you know, psychopathy. Yeah. And even the term, I think that's important to mention here, even the term psychopath is not an official diagnosis. It's an informal term that is used for a condition that is called antisocial personality disorder.
So it's a kind of umbrella. It's an umbrella term, essentially.
It's an umbrella term, exactly. It's very, very difficult to know for sure, or you know, or predict even who is a psychopath. Behaviorally, yes. I mean, you can observe behaviors and suspect psychopathy. So the superficial charm that I mentioned, grandiose sense of self, pathological lying, manipulation, lack of remorse. Failure to accept responsibility for own actions, promiscuous sexual behavior. This is quite common. So having many short-term relationships, poor behavioral control, lack of realistic long-term goals, impulsivity. All these things are red flags for a psychopath.
And if people are listening at home and they have suspicions about their own partner being narcissistic, for example, which is on the lighter side, but not light if you're living with it. But they have suspicions. You know, what are the signs to look out for if you were advising people? I don't know whether that's within your remit of research, but you know, if you were telling a woman who thinks that her husband is a narcissist and she's having a hard time living with him or whatever, and she needs to get out of that relationship, what are the signs to look out for that somebody may be narcissistic in a relationship?
Yeah, so some of the behaviors that I mentioned for psychopathy, they are very common for narcissistic personality disorder as well. So manipulation, being very controlling over the other person, being very aggressive every time that they don't get what they want, having obviously that, you know, grandiose sense of self-worth, and lack of remorse. I think that's, or guilt, you know, that's quite. Quite common. So every time you see somebody doing something that, you know, you're thinking, how is it possible not to feel guilt over it? Or how is it possible not to accept responsibility over it? Well, it is possible for certain, you know, for certain people.
Yeah, and do narcissists, do they pick up on social cues? Or do they have the ability to pick up on social cues?
That's another very interesting question. Yes, in fact, some studies suggest that they're better than the average person at picking at social cues. So there is a link between emotional intelligence and narcissism. So that's why I think they have, you know, this propensity, or they have, there is a potential risk there, because they're very good at understanding cognitively emotions, getting social cues, using social cues to their advantage. Mm-hmm. They just don't care, you know, as to, you know, how you will, you know, feel about, you know, their behavior or response to those social cues. And I guess that's the issue there, the main issue there.
Well, look, it's really intriguing listening to it, because I know people have a huge obsession with the darker side of humanity. And I don't know why, by the way, Costas, why they have particularly, by the way, I'm going to say this, it might kind of come across as completely sexist, but I think it's women more so that have an interest in the darker side of humanity more so than men. Because when we look at all those crime programs on TV, it's more so women that are intrigued by it. And I have no understanding. Why is that, by the way? Why are women more intrigued by it?
Well, I mean, there are studies that have shown that women are more attracted to males that score high on the dark triad, on, you know, dark traits generally. So psychopathy, narcissism, is that myth of the bad boy, you know, being really kind of attractive. I guess early on in human evolution, individuals that scored high on these traits, they had access to resources. So in those early societies, not today necessarily, obviously, but in those early societies, females would choose a male with darker traits, because they would think that, you know, if there was an attack in the tribe, or if they wanted access,
he was a good protector. Yeah,
exactly. You know, that might happen today in societies outside the West, so in societies where adversity, for example, is the norm, and that's something that is you know, great interest to me, because every time we talk about these traits, we think about, you know, our everyday life, we think about peers, colleagues, and so on and so forth. We don't think about countries that are war zones for the past 100 years and what happened there, and, you know, how can you be open to experience there as opposed to a narcissist or a psychopath to survive? So in these situations, and from an evolutionary perspective, psychopathy, while it could be a disorder, it has been construed in the context of an adaptive strategy. So generation after generation, one would expect that these traits would go up in the population in certain environments, in certain societies.
Mm. And it's interesting that you say that, because only a while ago we were talking about a study that was out. I can't remember who did the study, but they were talking about the differences between men and women and what we look for in a partner. And, you know, men, for example, are not interested too much in what a woman does for a living, because they're not looking for a provider. But women still are interested in what a man does for a living, because even though we live in a very equal society now, a much more equal society, a lot of women still look for somebody as a backup for security, for to be a provider. And I often wonder, is that kind of built into our DNA in some way? You know, that men feel this responsibility to provide, women feel that they want men to look after them. And that's still there. It still bubbles underneath somewhere.
For this particular behavior, I would say that probably it's primarily environment that creates certain behaviors, and you know we see big differences depending yeah. on different environmental demands. But there are genetic predispositions. I mean, we lived in a certain situation, certain societies for so many years, you know, for thousands of years. So some predispositions in behavior are there, and there are sex differences, and that's absolutely fine. You know, differences doesn't mean inequalities necessarily. So you can be different and equal. So
yeah. Well, look, I have to say a lot of people that say we're very much looking forward to. I know you're giving a talk on the 29th of January at the Well in Dublin on the psychology of psychopaths. And if people want to head along there, do they need a ticket or can they just go along on the night or how does that work out?
Yes, so they need a ticket and my understanding is that there are still a few left, but they're going fast. So they will need a ticket.
And where do they get? Where would they get the tickets? Where can they get them?
So it's on Eventbrite and I believe on the Wells website, I think there is a link to the event and they can go there and book tickets. But there is a ticket on the Eventbrite if you look for the Psychology of Psychopaths with my name and or the venue's name, you will find it there.
So for people who want to go along, it's the 29th of January. It's at the Well, that's the weekend after next, the Well in Dublin, and it's called The Psychology of Psychopaths and you can get tickets on Eventbrite. And I have to say, it's been a very interesting conversation, and I'm sure we'll have a chat again sometime. Dr. Kostas Papagiorgiou, thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate you coming on the air talking to us.
Thank you very much, and it was a great talk as well. I really enjoyed it. So have a good night.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.